RPG Lessons Learned. When the game is over, when your players are gone, that's when lessons are learned. We are at RPGLL Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, rpglpodcast@gmail.com, and check us out online at rpglessonslearned.com. Hi, welcome to RPG Lessons Learned, the show where you can learn from our mistakes. And with me today is Brian.
Hey, Dusty, how's it going?
It's going very well. So, Brian, it's just you and me today, and we're going to be rolling up your character for our upcoming Castles and Crusades Drakenland campaign. Now, having said that, we don't want to rip off the shtick of the character creation cast, so we have no intention to do this kind of thing regularly. It just so happens that Brian missed our session zero, which we already talked about in a previous episode, and this is Brian and I catching up and making his character for the campaign. So I'll share with Brian what everyone else is pulling together, and we'll work through all the character creation steps for him. So Brian, you have in front of you Eric Campion's Castles and Crusades character sheet, which is a spreadsheet that we're using in Google Sheets to make your character. And you also have the Castles and Crusades cheat sheet in front of you, which covers character creation in enough depth for us today, correct?
I sure do.
So, Brian, why don't I start off by giving you kind of an overview of the Drakenland campaign? We spent some time last in session zero of Drakenland really defining where you're coming from. Where you're coming from is a country that's just finished up a major war, and you guys are soldiers. You're neophytes, you're newbies, you're rookies, you're FNGs, whatever the correct military term is. You were trained, you went through training, but you never quite made it to the front. You were on your way to the war when the war ended, and now you're back home. And this war has been going on for so long that this country had built up a huge military, and there were all these soldiers sort of milling about with nothing to do, and that, you know, created problems in and of itself. So the Duke, who runs this country that you work for, the Duke has decided to send out, you know, little emissaries to populate embassies to support ambassadors in various countries. And you guys are headed to the mysterious Drakenland. Drakenland is a place where, you know, if someone's sitting around the campfire telling ghost stories, that ghost story probably takes place in Drakenland.
Ooh.
It's across a sea to the west. You have to head west to get to it. In fact, when we open up, you will be landing on the eastern coast of Drakenland, having made your westward voyage, and you'll discover lots of things about that country. Your mission in that country, just so you're aware, is to curry popularity, I suppose. Build the Duke's popularity with the people. The Duke has told you, look, make sure the people of Drakenland have a good impression of me, and he really wants you to work from the bottom up. Let the commoners become interested in the Duke and become interested in the Duke's men and what the Duke's men are doing to help the common people of Drakenland. And the Duke's a big believer in acquiring political power that way from the bottom up. So that's the campaign pitch for what you'll be doing. In session one, you'll land in Drakenland and we'll start our adventure. But that's what we're after.
Okay.
Okay, let's go ahead and create your character. So the first step in Castles and Crusades is to go ahead and roll 3d6 six times and assign those scores to your attributes. Now, Brian, we went ahead and did 4d6, dropped the lowest.
Okay, so I already pulled out 1d6, so let me pull out two more. Okay, so 4d6 six times.
Yep, 4d6 and then drop the lowest. So you'll need some scratch paper to record your six scores and then decide how you want to allocate them.
Okay, so let's do this. 46, six times. 3, 6, and 5. Let's go 1, 3, 6, 5. Oh, wow. 3 2s and a 5. So, well, that's 1, 2, 2, 5. Too bad it's not 2, 2, 7. Favorite show of mine from the 80s.
Ooh.
2 6s and a 4.
Nice.
4, 6, 6. So it's 3 times. Wow, 6 3/3. So this is interesting. I mean, well, I guess it is a D6, so there's only so many options.
Yeah, so Mike rolled quite well. Chris, I think, struggled a little bit. He did finally break into double-digit numbers, but you guys are certainly not on totally equal footing as far as your attribute scores.
Okay, 6, 5, and 2. And last one, 5, 2, 2 again. Interesting.
Mike actually rolled an 18 on his first or second roll.
Oh, so I'm supposed to... Okay, so I'm supposed to add it up.
You got to sum those up.
Okay, never mind. Well, 14, so 14, 9, 16. Okay, so my highest score is a 16, so my GMs are indifferent when I roll my own characters.
Perfect. All right, technically the next step is to go ahead and put those attribute scores to attributes. Go ahead and allocate them. However, my advice to you is... let's go ahead and pick your class first. So, Brian, if you look at the cheat sheet, pick a class of step 3, and you can see the cheat sheet covers every single class. Now, picking a class in Castles and Crusades is a little different than D&D 5e. It's different than Pathfinder, and it's different than 4th edition. In all of those D20 games, mm-hmm. once you pick a class, there's further customization that you do as you level. So as you level, you pick feats and you specialize, you know, in Pathfinder. Or in D&D 5e, you pick different paths and you specialize. In 4e, you pick different, what were they called? Not quite careers, but something like that. You'd pick a paragon path. That's not the case in Castles and Crusades. Once you pick monk, for example, it's a completely linear progression. At 3rd level, you get this. At 6th level, you get this. At 9th level, you get this, and that's the way it is for all monks everywhere. But there are quite a few classes in Castles and Crusades. So if you want to be that more armored fighter, but you don't want to depend on a god, they have a whole class for knight instead of fighter. So I want you to read through these classes and ask me questions, and I want you to pick a class for this campaign.
For whatever reason, in conversation when you guys ran through Session Zero, I thought that I was pre-selected, voluntold to be a cleric.
We need you to be something that would be appropriate for the sergeant to be. We've decided since you, with everything going on in your personal life, you might have a difficult time making the actual sessions. We wanted you to roll a character where if I needed to step in and roll that character or play that character for the session, you could be sort of an authority figure that could have more intel, et cetera, that would make sense for the GM to play, or that could get called away on different responsibilities. We had certainly landed on that. We had talked about, you know, Mike pulled his typical, the party needs a healer, and we discussed the fact that you seemed to really like playing lawful good characters.
Yeah.
You've said that before on the show.
Yeah.
So Mike had sort of pre-selected you for cleric, but we can make anything work. I want you to play something that you're interested in.
I am entirely okay with playing a cleric. It's kind of where after Mike put that in my head, it's kind of where I've been thinking, and I've already got my name down, and I actually kind of want to do a cleric. So, I mean, if I hate to ruin the flow of the podcast.
No, I think it's fine. If you want to be a cleric, let's have you be a cleric.
Yeah, I think cleric is where I want to go. I think we need a healer. So I have been playing. Nathan is going to message us about this. I've been playing Dragon Warrior 3, which was originally way back on the NES. I'm playing a Super Famicom port of it. But my party has a cleric, and his name is Nicholas. So just so that I can remember his name, the cleric that I wanted to create, I wanted to name him Nicholas after that character. So
now, did you, so in some of these old games, you could name the character, but was the character pre-named?
Pre-named.
You should pull the sprite of that character and somehow incorporate him into your character sheet.
Oh, yeah, I could totally do that. That'd be really easy. Yeah.
All right, cool. So you're Nicholas the Cleric.
Nicholas the Cleric.
So for class, go ahead and hit that drop down, and you can choose Cleric. This spreadsheet is phenomenal, by the way.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool.
And it went ahead and pre-populated your hit die. It pre-populated your base armor class and several other things.
And he's going to be human.
All right.
Because my sprite's a human.
Nicholas the human cleric. All right.
Nicholas is a very human name anyway.
Let's look at the cheat sheet and figure out what your prime attribute is. Every class has a prime attribute that you must choose. So for the cleric on the cheat sheet, I see the prime attribute that you must choose is wisdom. So there in column A, go ahead and set wisdom as yes. It's primary.
I literally just have to tweet and hit yes. Okay.
Just Y, yep. Now notice what that did. See how the target number to the right
changed from 18 to 12.
Changed from 18 to 12. When you have a prime attribute, it lowers your target number.
So if if I scored all sixes, it would give me a 12 as a default. I'm assuming that, or
no. That's your target number. So when I say make a wisdom saving throw, that's all I say. I say make a wisdom saving throw. You already know your target number based on if it's prime or not.
Okay.
So when I say make a wisdom saving throw, you're trying to hit a 12. So you roll your d20, you add your wisdom bonus, and you're trying to hit a 12.
Okay.
And by the way, as you level up, your saving throw further out to the right will populate, because when you truly roll saving throws, you get to add your level. So as you level up, your saving throws get easier. Wow. It really is a simple system. Now, I can make rolls harder. I might say make a class 5. I think it's called class 5. I don't think it's DC 5. But if I say make a difficulty 5 saving throw, what that means is look at your target number and add 5 to it. So right now, the way your character sheet is, if I said make a difficulty 5 strength saving throw, you would add 5 to your target number, so you need to hit a 23. If I say make a difficulty 5 wisdom saving throw, you need 17. To hit a 17.
Okay.
It's the equivalent of having a plus 6 bonus.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's so great. That makes perfect sense.
Now, as a human, so every class dictates one prime attribute. Every race gets to choose one other prime attribute. And humans get to choose two additional prime attributes. So choose two more attributes to set to prime.
Okay, so let me think this through. So my character, he is the sergeant. He is he's sort of an authority figure. How do I want to play him as a character? So I think that he needs to be like doggedly determined. So to do that, I think I would need to affect his strength and his constitution.
That makes perfect sense.
So that's what I'm going to do. Done.
Okay. And Nathan's already a bard, so your party is good on charisma. Do you want to go ahead and choose your attributes? So you've rolled your 6 attributes. Go ahead and put them in the appropriate attributes slot.
So by doing that, attributes. So this is something that an enemy potentially might roll against. So if I put 16 in my intelligence, that is I'm trying to think. I don't know the system. I don't know how the monsters work. But
it's just like Pathfinder or D&D. The attribute score, once you put it in there, you almost never use it again. Okay. What you really care about is the modifier. So you want to put your 16 where you want your highest modifier. So think about the rolls that you'll be making and put the 16 where it'll do the most good.
Okay, so for this, the modifier, like... And for the strength modifier would be like toward like an attack, right?
Correct. Or toward melee attack.
So so for like healing spells, that would be towards intelligence.
Actually, for you, spellcasting is based on your wisdom. But even healing spells, though, they're not actually modified by your wisdom. Your wisdom would modify things like your turn undead. For healing spells, it just automatically works. You lay hands on an ally, and if it's cure light wounds, it's a d8 hit points. Moderate wounds is 2d8, and serious wounds is 3d8.
So I'm a fighting cleric, so I'm going to put my 16 on my strength.
There you go.
So then on... I'm not really... Charisma, 9... easy. I don't care so much about that.
Everyone's dump stat.
Yeah, it literally is. Intelligence. I put my 9 there. So put my 14 in wisdom, constitution. I'll put my 13 in dex. I'll put my 12. Done.
All right. Now you see how that populated your saving throws.
Yeah.
So now, I don't know why it's plus 9 and plus 17. It shouldn't be. It should just be plain on 9 and 17.
Yeah.
That tells you what you need to roll on the die. Like, you don't need to reference anything. You just roll the die. And if the die, if the flat die roll is 9, then you pass a strength saving throw.
That's easy.
Yep. Because it's adding the plus 2 modifier, and it's adding 1 for your level. All right. Let's look at the cheat sheet and see what's next. We've recorded your attribute modifiers. You have picked a class. In picking your class, let's go ahead and record everything else about your class.
So Maurice is human.
Yep. Well, look at the class. Look at page 1 of the cheat sheet. So the hit die was already populated. Mm-hmm. The bonus to hit was already populated. You need to choose your alignment.
I'll do neutral good.
Makes sense. Let's go ahead and roll that D8 hit die. So what we're doing is the house rule that for first level, you get max hit points. So you can just go ahead and put an 8 in your max hit points. And in fact, Brian, you'll be putting a 9. Can you tell me why?
Because of the wisdom modifier?
Nope. Close. Dude, it always modifies hit points. Constitution.
Oh, I don't see. So yeah, okay.
You're adding your plus 1 con. So we're pretending like, for the sake of our house rule, for your first level, we're pretending like you rolled an 8 on your D8. And then every time you roll your hit points from now on, as you get a level, you get another D8. You're always going to add that plus 1 from your con.
So every level is another D8.
Yes.
So what's the, like, behind that? So what's the logic behind going from level 1 to level 2 and then your hit points doubling? That seems excessive.
You're questioning the very foundations upon which D&D are built, Brian. I'm not sure I can answer that question for you. No, and also,
I get all that. I guess I haven't played a level 1 character in so long.
Uh-huh.
That the idea that my character could potentially double. But so that you don't have that when you go from level 2 to level 3, or level 3 to a 4, or 4 to a 5, or 5 to a 6.
That's just that first jump, yes.
But that first jump is a potential double. And, like, I can't figure out a way to translate that to the real world. Like, I can't figure out how that would actually apply to reality. So
I could see it. I think there are jobs where survivability doubles, you know, once you make it past a certain point in the job.
I mean, that makes sense.
Keep your head down. Don't volunteer. You've learned those things that will help you make it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right, let's go ahead and put a 9 in your current hit points as well.
Okay.
Okay. Let's fill out your racial, class, and other special abilities. If you head back to the cheat sheet, you'll see those abilities.
Mm-hmm.
So, spells. You get 3 zero-level spells and 1 first-level spell, as well as turn undead. So what you'll want to do back on your character sheet is put your class abilities here. And I'll just go ahead and do it here. See?
So what you're doing is you're just typing it into the...
Yeah, I'm literally just populating it.
Okay.
Oh, and in fact, I don't need to, because if you look down below at the bottom of the character sheet, because you chose cleric and because you already did your intelligence and your wisdom, see how you've got a 3 and a 2? In cell G50 mm-hmm. and 51, that tells you how many spells you have. So we don't even need to record that. Your special ability is basically turn undead. All right, let's go ahead and roll your starting gold. So roll 2d10 and multiply that by 10.
Okay. So 130.
Nice. So on page 2, I'm going to go ahead and put for your first item, 130 gold pieces. Now, here's where you will need to reference the rest of the cheat sheet. I want you to purchase your starting equipment. Now, a couple things before you do that.
Sure.
We are tracking encumbrance in this game.
Oh, wow. That's new.
It is new.
Well, not new to, you know, RPGs and tabletop, but it's new to us.
Yeah, pretty much every system we've played has that concept, but we are doing it for the first time. So I want to point out some areas of the spreadsheet. You see on the right-hand side where it says container name?
Yeah.
You can actually hit that drop-down and choose different containers, assuming you purchase these containers. And any items you put in that container will have the encumbrance value cut in half because you're wearing the item. And it makes sense, right? Intuitively, it's half as difficult or less to throw a torch in your backpack as it is to constantly carry that thing around. So you'll want to put some things in your containers. Over here on the right, once you figure out what armor you're going to buy, you should go ahead and list the armor here. Let's see here. Let's say you bought plate mail. The encumbrance value for that might be 8. I'm making stuff up. But for worn, you're going to say yes, and that cuts the encumbrance down.
It makes total sense.
Let's go ahead and have you reference the equipment lists, and then we'll come back in for the audience and tell them what you've purchased.
Okay. I know I only have 130 gold, but I really want that full plate. So I'm just going to ask the shopkeeper really nicely if he'll, you know, just let me slide on the 870.
He will not.
Okay.
We're doing it this way because I really want getting full plate to be kind of a big deal.
Yeah. No, of course. So Dusty, I'm looking through the equipment list here and I'm seeing like tents. Do I need a tent? I mean, what if it rains?
Let's not worry about it to that level because you will be in a garrison and you will be able to draw some equipment. You are outfitting yourself. So if you go on an expedition that requires a tent, let's just go ahead and assume that your embassy will issue that to you.
Can I assume the same thing with other items like cords, crowbars and things like that, or just tents?
Let's just assume it with like camping gear, like pretty common camping gear.
Okay.
Things that we would consider personal effects, even personal weapons, those you'll be buying out of your character's budget.
If it's something, it would be like an adventurer's kit or whatever. We are responsible for that.
Yes.
It comes out of our per diem, but we're responsible.
Yes,
there you go. Okay, so I'm done with what I've selected. So again, my character, he is lawful neutral. He's sort of a little gritty. He is stubborn. He's all that. So I've selected a two-handed sword as my weapon.
Okay. Now, I should have said, not every god will allow that. Clerics usually have to deal with blunt weapons, like warhammers, things like that. So just know that as you create this religion for your cleric, this needs to be a deity that for whatever reason favors two-handed swords.
Crom.
Crom? You're a cleric of Crom?
Yeah, sure. Hey, I mean, that makes sense, right? I think.
It does to an extent. Remember that you're currying... I'm fine with it if you are. Remember your goal is to curry favor with populace. With a populace, I should say. And, yeah, sure. If you really care about metallurgy and the riddle of steel, go for it.
So I purchased a tunic so I don't walk around naked with some heavy boots. For my armor, armor is important to me. I got the best armor I could afford, which is scale mail with a great helm and a large steel shield.
The great helm feels very appropriate to a sergeant.
Yeah.
So, for those listening, when he says the best armor he can afford, I think, for whatever reason, I'm used to starting with plate mail in 5th edition or even in 4th edition, and getting new armor wasn't that big a deal. In Castles and Crusades, in this game, I really want getting upgraded armor to feel like a big deal. And it makes sense. In the feudal economy, you know, armor wasn't cheap. Armor was one of the most expensive things you could possibly splurge on. So it makes total sense that armor should be expensive.
Yeah, and in the RPGs that I've played outside of like Dungeons and Dragons, and you know the stuff that we've played together, getting armor has been a long process. It's like saving up and getting a new car. It's expensive. Dragon Warrior, in all the games, you start out with just basically clothes, and so it makes perfect sense to me that you start off with basically junk. So to me, starting off with scale mail was pretty darn good.
All right, so I went ahead and changed your sword and your shield to be worn.
That makes sense.
Because when you're not physically carrying those, you will be wearing those on your back or whatever. Those make sense as being worn objects. Let's take a look at page 1 and see what that encumbrance says. You are lightly encumbered.
Okay.
So you are encumbered. If you drop one more point of encumbrance, you'll no longer be lightly encumbered. But right now, being lightly encumbered, you have a +1 difficulty to climb. And, you just changed it.
Yeah, so I'm dropping my 50-foot cord.
Okay.
Which is giving me back 5 GP as well.
You are no longer lightly encumbered. You can now take your full move, and you have no penalty to climbing rolls.
Great.
But this is part of the reason that we're doing encumbrance in this campaign, Brian, is that this sheet makes it so easy to manage. All right. Now, what I want you to do is take your armor from your item list, and I want you to populate your armor and your weapons here on this front page.
Yeah, I love this. I was prepared to go in and have to manually do all of this, so this is great. So, my sword is the two-handed sword, so let me select that.
All right, go ahead and populate your armor as well, and your shield.
Scale mail. And shield, steel.
Large steel.
And then, is there a spot for helm?
So, one thing I want to point out, there's no spot for helm, by the way. One thing I want to point out is, look at the shield, large steel. You see how it has shield versus number of foes per round?
Oh, yeah, neat.
So, 3 people can attack you. Your shield bonus works for those 3 people. If a 4th person attacks you, your AC is 14 instead of 15.
So, is that they literally just basically circle me and the shield is not capable of providing added protection?
There's that, and there's also the fact that in a 6-second round, you've already deflected 3 blows.
Gotcha.
So deflecting a 4th is too much to ask of that shield. So this is just an overall, there's more nuance to the system. Having said that, you will rarely be in a circumstance where you take 3 attacks in a round.
Okay, so helm, great. It says other AC modifiers. I'm assuming it goes in there?
Correct.
So +7?
It doesn't sound quite right.
AC armor class adjustments for helmets applied to 2 strikes against the head only, did not otherwise adjust AC. So,
okay, so
attacks
does
against the head, it's an additional 7. Otherwise, yeah, it doesn't affect it at all.
So if someone does a called shot on your head.
Oh, that's lame.
You can drop the helm if you want.
But I want one.
Well, then keep it.
Okay. So I hope that there are monsters and characters and NPCs that really want to attack the head.
I'll have to make sure I incorporate that into the game. All right. I believe, Brian, you have completed your character. All you'll have to do from here is every day before you start your day, go ahead and populate your spell book with the spells that you want your character to know for that day.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. So in the game, when we actually get there, should I have that done before I show up for the game? Like, haha, I just have to do that as my character. My character, you know, is ignorant of what's actually going to happen. Or is that more of a strategic thing of, I really just want to make sure that I do that based on whatever we have to do that the game's going to account for?
Well, let's give it context in the world. So the context in the world is, if you actually read the chapter of the book, not just the cheat sheet, but the book based on clerics, the way clerics work is that every morning you spend an hour in prayer. And it's during that hour that you're really selecting your spells. So you have the opportunity every morning to choose the spells you think might be appropriate for that day. So if you sleep in a dungeon and you know that when you wake up you got more dungeon stuff to do, you might prep a bunch of heal spells.
That makes sense.
If you're sleeping in town and you know you have a difficult negotiation tomorrow, you might prep some detect chaos or detect evil. So it's that hour of prayer every morning where you choose your spells.
Okay. So, I mean, I'll just be strategic about how I select my spells. It makes perfect sense.
And for those listening at home, too, just so everyone knows, a cleric has access to all of the spells at level 1, all the spells at level 0. Wizards have to acquire spells for their spell books, but clerics simply have access. They have a more limited spell list, but clerics have access to all of it when they start, you know, praying in the morning, and then they pray down to just which ones they want. All right, so Brian, you've made a character. I added a last name to be funny to Nicholas.
Oh, God. I'm afraid. Nicholas de
Bourbon.
Bourbon.
De Bourbon. It's a French name. Do you know what it's from?
I'm trying to think of like the French novels or whatever. No, off the top of my head, which would be like the Three Musketeers.
It's Forever Night.
Oh, I didn't never watch that.
It was one of my favorite shows for a long time. It's my favorite vampire fiction ever. My Vampire the Masquerade game I'm running for the guys is heavily based on Forever Night, just because that is the most vampire fiction I've ever consumed. All right, let's go ahead and fill out just gender, height, weight, age. Experience will be zero. That's easy. But let's go ahead and fill everything else out, and you are completely done with your character.
Okay, so male, height. So do I assume that in this time frame that the average male is like 5'5"?
It's up to you. You could be particularly well-fed, and you've reached 6 feet.
I don't think he's going to be 6 feet. I'll say 5'10". He's around my height.
This will be a short party. We have a
Five ten's not short, dude. 5'10" is not short.
Fair enough.
He's gonna be a stocky 2'10".
But we have a halfling, a gnome, and a half elf.
Age. Okay, so thinking back to we were prepared for.
So let's give it context in the world. On the one hand, you're a sergeant. On the other hand,
but I have zero experience too.
So, remember that I said you were on your way to the war. You hadn't made it to the war yet. Yeah, for your platoon, where none of you saw combat, and you were just coming off of training, being sent to the front, you did particularly well in training, and you were made sergeant. Yeah, and if you want to be an LT, I'm fine with that.
Okay, the idea of being a lieutenant just out of officer candidate school, with no experience whatsoever. Yeah, I like that. Okay, I want to change it. That's what we're doing.
All right, you're an LT. So, should we put that in the character's name?
Yeah, Lieutenant Nicholas de Bourbon.
You can get rid of the de Bourbon if you want.
That's fine. I like the name. I'll never use it, but I like it.
All right, fair enough. Brian, you have a character.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah, so, Duke, you will do your Duke Artois, proud.
That's my goal.
Yep. I'll share with you a couple things about how your character looks. It's up to you, you know, facial features, hair color, that's all up to you, and I'll probably ask for that in session one. But just so you're aware, the tabard that you wear, the guys already came up with this. The tabard of Ossia, which is your country, is a red tabard with a white griffin and three concentric white circles, which stand for family, fortune, and fortitude.
Okay.
And the war that you just won was a war of commerce. It was a war to open up, you know, trade ports. Basically, I don't know, tariffs, duties, whatever were an issue, and a war broke out over that. So it was very much an economic war over resources / tariffs / markets. But it was not a religious crusade or anything like that.
Okay. Makes sense.
All right. Brian, you are ready for session one of Drakenland. Those of you at home, thank you for listening.
People call them postmortems, evaluations, appraisals, reviews, retrospectives. We call them lessons learned, and we're sharing ours with you.